He said, "Brother, you can walk." I'm sorry.
My name is Roland. I'm an addict. And I'm tired. I'm sleepy. I'm too old for this. I've been talking all weekend, so I'm actually tired of hearing myself talk. I thought I was going to be speaking at 7:30. And we on NA time, so it's 9:45. And I know you're probably thinking, you said, well, if you're talking about you tired, but if you was getting high, you wouldn't be talking about you tired to go do something to get high. But I ain't getting high. So I don't do the stuff that I used to do when I was getting high. I used to do a lot of stuff when I was getting high that today I don't do. Anyway, I would have been here this weekend hanging out with you guys had I not been working. This would have been a great experience for people to be able to, you know, hear some of the historical facts about Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, this program has grown so much in the last 20 years. That it's just mind-blowing. I was at a world convention a couple of years ago. I don't even remember which one it was. But they did a thing on the screen where they showed how the first, wherever a meeting started, a group started, they showed a little dot on a global map. And they showed one little light would light up. And they started in Southern California. And obviously, and then they started just showing little dots as time went on, and little lights. And before you know it, the whole planet started lighting up, where you saw little lights, light, dot, 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 dot. And then it got bigger and little clusters of lights. And then, you know, it was obviously big in the U.S., and then you saw lights in different parts of the country, of the world. And then after a while, you saw the whole world was kind of lit up with Narcotics Anonymous, and it made me tearful. I got a little tearful. I thought, man, that's heavy that this program is now all over the world. I've been fortunate enough to be able to do a lot of international travel, and I've been to meetings in all kind of places all over the world. You know, I was I spoke at a convention in Moscow. You know, I was in a 400-year-old church and right outside of Marbella, Spain. In a basement. That was an NA basement. The whole basement in this 400-year-old cobblestone church, a candlelight meeting, everything in the room was all NA. You know, I've been in NA meetings in Paris and Amsterdam and Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic and Thailand. And I mean, this program is all over the place. You know, and I got to tell you, you know, I am proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I've done a lot of stuff in my life. Some stuff I'm proud of, a lot of stuff I'm not proud of. I'm proud of this affiliation. I'm proud of the fact that I found my way into the rooms. So I just want to acknowledge our brother who passed away a few days ago, who was going to be here this weekend. I was actually looking forward to seeing him, Vicente. And I just want to say a prayer give a moment of silence for him. I hope you guys have done that over the weekend. I'm sure you have. And to his lovely long-term wife, Janelle, who I love very much. And if we could just have a moment of silence for Vicente. Thank you. He was a good man. He was a very dedicated, loyal member of this fellowship. He was a good husband. He was a man of God and just a good brother all around. And one of the deals about getting old, you know, is that we lose people. You know, the longer we stick around, you know, we see people that we loved and hugged and laughed with and gone to meetings with. And then we see all these empty chairs. I mean, each of us can think of these empty chairs representing someone that we grew up with in this fellowship that's not with us anymore. You know, and one day that's going to be your chair. One day that same chair you're sitting in now is going to be empty because you're not going to be around. You know, and so, you know, it just reminds me to just cherish the relationships that we have, the people that are important to us, just because you never know, you know, you just never know. You know, but that's a good thing, because what Narcotics Anonymous gave me was brothers and sisters and family. You know, I'm adopted. I didn't have family like that. You know, I found my way into these rooms on June 10th, 1986. And see, I'm not one of those guys, you know. See, I didn't know about NA. You know, I came from Chicago to San Francisco. I started running the streets of San Francisco and got caught up in that underworld, which I just couldn't wait to get to. You know, I couldn't wait to get to the dark side, you know, and so I came to San Francisco and I immersed myself in that darkness, and much of which was centered around my addiction, driven, fueled by my addiction. And I didn't know, you know, didn't nobody kind of start in Pacific Heights and wound up in the Tenderloin. And nobody was coming to the Tenderloin with the basic text. Nobody was coming to the Tenderloin trying to carry the message. You know, people would learn stuff in the rooms like stay out of slippery places. And so the Tenderloin was a slippery place. And didn't nobody come to the shooting gallery talking about you need to go to a meeting. Didn't nobody come to the shooting gallery and say, you know, they got a program called Narcotics Anonymous where an addict can learn how to live happy, joyous, and free, and an addict can have freedom from active addiction. I didn't hear that. I never heard that. I had heard about the other fellowship, and, you know, that's some stuff that, you know, that's some changes over the years, this whole other fellowship thing. It's like Voldemort and Harry Potter. What's the guy's name that you can't say? What's his name? Him, yeah. So we like, oh, you can't say that at the NA meeting. You know, you can't say, you got to say the other program. You can't say that. I got a chip that says clean and sober. I got an NA chip that says clean and sober that I got at an NA meeting. It says NA on one side and it says clean and sober on the other side. I still got my 30, 40, 60-day chip that says clean and sober. The first set of steps that I worked, you know, back, you know, when I got clean, my sponsor worked the steps out of AA. And so my first time I ever worked the steps, I worked them out of AA. And, you know, now we've gotten to the point where, you know, you tell people you can't say, you know, you clean and sober. It's, I understand that. The best part, I heard a girl in Sausalito say, it's the same, but you saying clean and sober, it's like telling somebody I'm a fruit. And I'm a peach and I'm a fruit. Well, when you told us you was a peach, we already knew you was a fruit. So that was the logic about it. So when you say you're an addict, we know that means alcohol. You don't have to say I'm an addict and I'm an alcohol. I understand the logic of it, but come, come on. I met Hollywood Henderson in an airport one day. I don't know if y'all know who Hollywood Henderson is. He played for the Dallas Cowboys. He was a very flamboyant cocaine addict. He hooked up with one of the Pointer Sisters. Hooked up with one of the Pointer Sisters, and she turned his butt out on that crack. So he'd be going to a Dallas Cowboy game on a private jet in 100-degree temperature, and he'd get off a private jet in a limo in a mink coat, full-length mink coat, sweating, tweaking. So he's one of us for sure. And he got clean, you know, he got clean about 20 years ago. And he actually hit the lotto. He got clean and hit the lotto. Won $27 million in the lotto. And he said, I was already a millionaire. I didn't care nothing about this lotto. And then he started doing workshops. He became a counselor and a motivational speaker. And anyway, so he's got a book out. And I met him at an airport, and when I see people, I walk right up to him. Hey, what's going on, man? And I walked right up to him. Hey, my wife was like, oh, jeez. And I said, Hollywood, I said, hey, man, I read your book. I like what you're doing. I appreciate you. I'm glad you're clean, blah, blah, blah. I said, hey, look, what if I can get you to come and speak at an NA meeting in San Francisco? And he said, oh, man, I don't know about that. And I said, why? He said, because NA got a resentment against AA. And I couldn't argue with him because, you know, there is a little tension there. But that's some stuff. Those are growing pains, you know. I mean, you know, it ain't a big deal. I understand the logic of it, but I still think that we got to make it easier for the newcomer to, like, feel welcome. And the newcomer, you know, we got all these rules, and there's all this etiquette, and there's all this, like, things, and they're like, the newcomer don't know. And you get a newcomer stand up and say he's sober and clean and sober, and we're like, can't say that, man. You need to say, you know, and we check in the newcomer because they didn't say it right and all that. And I mean, how important is that, really? You know, how mixed of a message is that, really? If you're in a safe place and you can talk about wanting to be clean, and we can explain to them clean means clean, you know. But anyway, so when I got here, I didn't, you know, I came, when I got clean in 1986, it wasn't so black and white. You know, when I got clean, I would go to AA meetings and NA meetings and CA meetings. I'd go to any kind of meeting I could go to because we just hung out. Remember, you know, there's some people in here that I came up with, you know, that we grew up together in this fellowship. That we were young guns, you know, we were, right, Sean? We were like young guns, and we were excited about being clean. There was a whole little network of us, you know, that we went to the same meetings. We traveled all around the area here and went to meetings. We went to dances. We went to functions. And people would go to all kind of wherever we could go to catch a meeting. And I remember feeling, you know, and we didn't have the flat book that they call it now. We didn't have the step working guide. We had the four-step guide that came around after a while, but we had the little white book and the basic text, and we had each other. And so when people were working steps, a lot of us who've been clean over 25 years, probably your first set of steps, you probably worked out of the AA big book. And my sponsor, that's where he got it from, that's how he gave it to me, and that's how I did it in the beginning. You know, and so I felt kind of conflicted when we got to that point where we were supposed to be mad at AA. Because I was like, shit, you know, I mean, and it talks in our literature about how our, you know, how we got this from them. You know, when I was coming in, I heard that they had an AA function across the hall, and somebody said, man, you know, that's the AA people over there. And I was like, oh. So anyway, growing pains, I understand the logic of it, but I'm just telling you my history, my experience with it. That's how I was when I got here, and so I heard about the steps through the other fellowship. And what happened is that I would go to the meetings, any meeting, and I remember being in some AA meetings telling my story. Now, I'm an IV drug addict. I used to step over alcoholics to get to the cooker. I see an alcoholic and step over him, you know. I didn't like alcohol. I didn't like identify as an alcoholic. A lot of us struggled in the beginning with that idea that alcohol is a drug, period, because we didn't think alcohol even counted. You know, a lot of us didn't count alcohol. I don't count. You know, I'm a drug addict. I shoot heroin, right? I free base. I smoke cocaine. We was doing cocaine because cocaine wasn't even addictive back then, right? Right, Wilbur? Cocaine wasn't addictive back in the day. That's what people would say. You can don't shoot no, don't mess with that heroin. If you're gonna get high, do cocaine because you can't get hooked on cocaine. You know, and so I struggled in the beginning with, you know, when I would go to AA meetings. You know, I would tell my story, and my story wasn't all that positive towards alcoholics. I didn't think highly of alcoholics. I felt that being a drug addict was like, especially being an IV heroin addict, I thought that was like the pinnacle of drug use. Like, I'm like in a whole nother level of drug use. Like, we a whole nother level. I mean, y'all wannabes, you know, hope fiends, you know, chipping, weed smoking, you know, toot snorting stuff. You know, come on, get on with that, man. I felt like I was like a real, and I was proud to be a drug addict. And I remember going into an AA meeting and sharing that kind of stuff. Because, you know, I wasn't ashamed to be a drug addict. And I go into an AA meeting and talk about cooking it up, you know, speedballing and cocaine and having to feel like the top of my head just blew off. Bam! And the alcoholics didn't like that. The alcoholics was having problems with us back then. Because, you know, we were in there. And then, you know, me and my buddy Rick, we got a secretaryship at a big AA meeting in Palo Alto. We were like the secretaries of like this big Sunday morning AA meeting on Waverly, I think it was. Down, you know, all these rich Palo Alto old people would come. Man, we was bringing hoes. We would get people to share the meeting. We bringing hoes and gangsters and bank robbers to the meeting, you know, sharing. We got hookers up there sharing the meeting, you know, looking like N.A. hookers. You know our N.A. girls, you know. Our N.A. girls be laying it out, you know. So these people are like, we need to find some other place for these addicts to go. I am sure, I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect that there was some steering meetings. Some group consciousness taken at the AA meetings and said, look, we need to get guys like this out. They got them addicts is coming. Too many of those addicts are coming over here. And I think AA was a big part of promoting NA for quite a bit back. Tommy, right? Quite a bit back then, because they wanted us out of there. And so I would go to a meeting sometime, and some old AA guy would tell me, they would stop you in the middle. Excuse me. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to limit your share to alcohol. And then I got mad. Like, shit, it's my story. Sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I ain't got but one story. And I came to NA. And then I decided that out of a resentment, I ain't never going back to AA. You don't want me? I knew what it felt like for somebody to not want me, feel like I didn't belong. So I came here and I stayed. But I do feel forever will feel grateful to that fellowship for opening the door for us, for developing a model that we and many, many other people with different kinds of afflictions have been able to adapt and use for the last 70-something years. You know, I am so grateful for them. You know, so I came into the rooms and June 10th, 1986, I went into treatment in handcuffs from jail, because that's how a lot of us wind up in treatment. A lot of us wind up, we don't wake up one day and have, you know, I got all this dope and I got all this money, but I think I'm going to go to rehab tomorrow. You know, most of us go to rehab because somebody got their foot in our butt. We got some pressure on us from the court, from your partner, from your parents, from your job, from the dope man, from the doctor. Somebody saying, you need to get some help or else. And so I came in handcuffs from San Bruno. I was looking at a 4-year joint suspended sentence. I had to do a year of county time before I could go to rehab. I ain't got no veins left. I'm hidden in the hands. I'm living in the shooting gallery. I'm scandalous and scurvy. I done went from selling dope to selling bunk. I was a washed up. I was 20. By the time I was 25, I was washed up. And I got here when I was 29. And when I came to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I remember the brother who was sharing it became a good friend of mine. It was Eric. And his name was Eric W. Some of you guys know about Eric, know Eric. Some of you know of Eric. I know I'm looking around. A lot of us do remember Eric. But he shared the first meeting I ever went to. And he was a beautiful spirit, a 6'4" black man who had spent a lot of time in the penitentiary. He was built like a bodybuilder. And he had this very sweet, gentle spirit. And when I heard him sharing, he was talking about some very personal stuff at group level. And it blew me away. And they say that people came to the rooms and they saw y'all being clean and they didn't believe that the addicts were really clean. I didn't believe y'all was really clean. Well, I did. I believed you were really clean. You know, I believed it. I didn't believe that people were faking. I believed Wilbur was clean. Wilbur was here when I got here, and he said he was clean. I believed him. And I also believed that he was an addict like me. What I came here is I saw addicts that used like I used. And I didn't have to put no cut on it in the meetings. When I came to NA, I didn't have to water it down, and I didn't have to eliminate parts of my story. And back in the beginning, you know, the stories was pretty raw. You know, people were raw. There wasn't all this political correctness, and there wasn't all this, like, etiquette and stuff. People would get up there and talk about some stuff, you know. And so I felt right at home, you know. And we didn't have a lot of, you know, it was pretty basic in terms of what you were supposed to do. You know, like, and what's different now to me, what I'm just thinking about some of the differences, one of the things that some of the stuff that's changed over the years, that there was a sense of urgency about the fellowship. Like we say in our literature, in desperation we sought help. There was a certain desperation that we shared. You know, like the people came in here and like we were really clear, it felt, that we were really clear that if we don't stick together, we're not going to survive. And so we clung to each other. You know, we clung from different races and different drugs of choices and different ages and different communities. We found our way here and we clung together. And there are guys in this room right now. And we had some role models. We had some OGs in the room. You know, we had some people who had been there for a while that were smooth with it. You know, that they had got smooth with like being clean. And I could do names like George. Like George P. and Pauline and Lou and Bob B. And, you know, we had some old guys and they made it look so good being clean. And, you know, Steve, you know, and we had some guys that when you saw them be clean, you didn't feel like you said, because most of our fear is that if I get clean, I'm going to turn into a punk. I get clean, I'm going to get soft. I'm going to be a square. And then we saw these guys that was making clean look good. Right? We saw guys making clean look good, and then we wanted to be part of that. You know, and clean felt cool. It felt like being clean ain't soft, it ain't weak. Clean is cool. This is the new lick. This is the thing. Now, that's like I used to tell people, man, I know where the good dope is. Don't go buy dope from him. I know that they got the good dope over here. I wanted to tell everybody, man, I know where the good stuff is. Now, the good stuff is being clean and being in NA. And so I wanted to share that message with people, man, come on and get some of this. Come get some of that. And once I found it, I didn't never want to go back. Once I found that, I never wanted to go back to using again. I never wanted to go back to that life. I'd found a way out. And I didn't know there was a way out for guys like us. So when we had what we had in the beginnings is you had some people telling you with no hesitation about what you needed to do to stay clean. You know, it wasn't all this, you know, well, you know, take your time, do what you want to do. You know, but people would tell you right away, you need to work the steps or you're going to die. You know, you need to work the steps or you're going to die. You know, and, you know, there was the fellowship part of the program was really important to me in the beginning, you know, because we in this whole area right here, you know, we had, and San Jose has had a very strong fellowship for years, one of the best fellowships in the country. But we had different pockets of recovery all over. So we had San Francisco. And, you know, we would go to Post and Mason on Saturday nights, and then we would go to Romp and Stomp in Burlingame, and then we would go to Oakland to the Boathouse, and you know, and so we would all have these places that we would go for us. And then something interesting started to happen. You know, the judges and the treatment centers and the psych units and all that start sending. And you know, some of my best friends are psych patients. Yeah. You know, I ain't got nothing against psych patients. I ain't got nothing against people getting sent from the judge. But what happened is that other people, other entities, other organizations start using Narcotics Anonymous, saying instead of sending, you know, instead of doing treatment on people or instead of giving people the help they need, they just say send them to NA. And so we start having the meetings be a place that you know, a lot of people weren't there because they wanted to be there. A lot of people was just passing through. It felt like a lot of people were just passing through. I mean, it ain't nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm not saying, but it changed the dynamic. You know, and then we had meetings that used to be really strong and powerful. People started not going so much because the people that were showing up didn't seem that interested in it. I mean, you go to a meeting, I won't mention any names, but you go to a meeting that and the meetings used to be an hour and a half long, all of them. You know, there was all hour and a half long meetings. And if you go to different parts of the country, meetings can be 2 hours long. You know, they had meetings in San Francisco, 45 minutes, because we got so busy, you know, we got to hurry up and get our meeting and get out of there. You know, and so you would go to the meeting, and then everybody wants to speak or share. There'd be everybody in the back talking. And then, you know, then people would get up and leave and walk out on the speaker and be making noise. And you'd be thinking, I felt like this is my fellow, it's my family. These guys are disrespecting this place that's kind of sacred to me. You know, this is sacred to me. And what happened for a lot of people over the years is a lot of folks stopped going to as many meetings. They stayed connected to their own support network, which is consists of a lot of NA folks, but they didn't feel as connected in the meeting. And so you can see that reflected today. You can go to a lot of meetings around the country, and you can see meetings that were once vibrant, strong meetings. Meetings are places where people go get their slip signed off. And a lot of the people that are really serious about recovery, you know, are finding other ways to do their recovery. And then and then we've gotten very opinionated over the years. You know, we've gotten very, this has become a business. You know, we have conventions and we're charging people to go to the conventions. People get, you know, butthurt about that. I don't know why I got to pay X amount of dollars to go to the convention. What about the newcomer? If I ain't got a badge on, we just had the last thing we had. If you didn't have a badge on, you couldn't go to some of the big meetings. People didn't like that. But, you know, you have to pay to put these things on. So there's a lot of division that's happened in the fellowship over the years. I think we're having growing pains, you know, and I know we're going to survive. You know, I believe that regardless of that, the fellowship is going to survive. But I think it is important to acknowledge that it has changed, and we've changed. You know, a guy said at one of the last conventions, Tyrone from Chicago, my homeboy, he said, one of the cool things about getting 25 years clean is you got 25 years clean. One of the bad things about getting 25 years clean is that you're 25 years older. And as we get older, we get kind of cranky, you know, and we're thinking about how it used to be, and it ain't how it used to be, so we kind of mad at the youngsters for coming in here and changing stuff and writing new literature and want to change this and change that, and we're talking like this is, you know, and, you know, you don't even know who I am. I'm the guy that did the so-and-so. You know, and so a lot of folks, I'm seeing a lot of folks pulling away from the fellowship over the years. I don't go to as many meetings as I used to, but I still love to go to meetings. I still love to be, don't be showing me no plaque at will, but you got me out here at 10 o'clock at night. I might talk all, you know. So, anyway, no, I ain't gonna do that. I ain't gonna do that. I'm ready to go to bed. I just want to say that I love Narcotics Anonymous. I have been and will continue to be a very proud member of this fellowship. I will sing the praise of Narcotics Anonymous, but I'm not afraid to say, you know, what I think. And I encourage you to not be afraid to say what you think as well. And I think our primary purpose is always to try to, you know, keep the door open for another addict to find their way to recovery. You know, and anything that we might do personally or, you know, as a particular group that might make it difficult for an addict to feel safe and comfortable in the rooms, I think we need to revisit that. My experience is that everybody finds their way. You know, everybody has their own path to recovery, and, it, you know, what keeps me clean might get you loaded. You know, there's no timetable on when you work the steps. You know, if you worked one step a month, in a year, you'd have all 12 steps done. You know, some people back in the day, they was working all 12 steps in a month. You know, so it's just how you do it. You know, we've gotten, luckily for us, and I'll say this and I'll stop, luckily for us that we have now more resources available to the newcomer. We have pamphlets like In Times of Illness that can help people work through some struggles that they might have with medications and physical illnesses. We've got those step working guide. You know, we've got the you know, the new literature that's come out and the new, you know, we got the sixth edition of the basic text. We got the Living Clean book. We've got, they're working on a lot of new stuff right now. And we're global. You know, you are part of a group that is global. This is a movement, and many people believe that the 12-step movement itself has probably been one of the most significant spiritual movements of the 20th century. That in terms of the impact that it's had on the world, there's nothing that can compare to this. And, you know, I do counseling. I've been in the treatment field all the 29 years that I've been clean. And I've seen all the other strategies and techniques that people use to try to help addicts get clean. And there's nothing that can compare to this model. There's nothing that can compare to the 12-step model. If you are receptive to this, consider yourself blessed. You know, if you're receptive to being at a meeting, getting a hug, working some steps, believing in a power greater than yourself, turning your will and your life over, doing some praying and meditating, telling on yourself, helping other people. If that resonates with you, consider yourself blessed. Because a lot of addicts, this doesn't resonate with them, and they're lost out there. They're trying to find some other ways to fix this. And all those other very expensive ways, for many people, lead them to a place of very increased distress and increased frustration and this sense of hopelessness. I'm not saying there's not other paths, but I have not seen any in my personal and professional life that I think actually compare to this model. That, you know, just as an example, it's a Saturday night. You guys been listening to people talking all day long. I know you want to go home. You know, I want to go home. But if here we are sitting in a church on Saturday night, listening to people share their experience, strength, and hope. There's something magical that's happening here, you know, and it ain't perfect. And it's still a work in progress, but I am so blessed to be part of it, and I'm glad you guys are part of it too. Thank you very much.
Let's give Roland another hand. Let's give Sherry a hand too. Okay, listen up, you guys. This is how we're going to do this and close this up. We're going to need some help because some of the volunteers helped clean this place up. They split. Left with some addicts here, so what we're going to do